interviewing the leading private equity executives and unlocking the secrets of success. Welcome to the Private Equity Podcast with Alex Rawlings.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Brendan Anderson, founder and managing partner of Scaleco Capital, a private equity firm investing in the microcap businesses. Welcome, and thank you very much for sharing your insights with us, Brendan.
Thank you for inviting me. Excited to talk to you.
As is customary on the podcast, if you could give us a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please.
Yeah, I've been in this microcap market. I define as sub $5 million of EBITDA my entire life. My family owned a small business here in the Midwestern United States. I started out as a banker in Chicago, lending to these businesses. I was blessed to have a boss at the bank that suggested I'd be maybe a better owner-operator of a business. And so he and a group of his friends helped me find and buy the first business that we bought. And really have spent the last 28 plus years learning to be a better investor and operator and kind of working on best practices in this microcap world. We formed, over that period of time, we've formed four funds and invested in 23 companies. I'm a huge believer in the value creation available in this, this lower market, transforming largely family-run lifestyle businesses into, those have a certain valuation and transforming into something that other people, they don't value at a higher number. We big believers in partnering with humble, hungry, motivated entrepreneurs and leaders. And we're heavily focused in the Midwestern United States, where we don't think there's a better place to be investing in those sorts of companies and people.
Flying the flag for the Midwest. What one mistake do you see private equity firms or portfolio companies making, and what actions would you suggest to correct them?
No, it's great because I've been listening to some of your podcasts and I chuckle because obviously we're a relatively small fund and isolated in the mid part of the United States. And so we're always trying to learn as much as we can from everybody. But I think through our experience through the years, it's really speed. It's getting out in front of this. Most of the companies we invest in are used to making decisions over long periods of time and not using data. So, speed is, being able to get in there, have the data, make the decisions is probably the single greatest thing we've learned over time. And then obviously change. Change is important. A lot of these companies have been operating in the same kind of way for a long period of time and, similar process. It's really getting in there and getting the go-to-market strategy, the data decision-making process, getting the hiring decisions. It takes time. It's challenging, but those are the two things that we've learned over time. And what to do about them. I wish I had a better answer, but it really is transparency and communication. And often you get into a deal and you think you're all on the same page, and you just got to be open and transparent and communicate and say, look, we do have a shot clock. We've got to get moving, and we do have to make these changes. And we were upfront with you about needing to make these changes. And that's probably been one of the hardest things for us is when you go a little bit, the pace of changes is frustrating for the historical people. But when it works and when you can get them on board, it's magical. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, well, obviously an advocate being an executive search, getting the right people, but certainly a challenge for anything. And when you get the right person, you just want to clone them and put them in every business with the relevant experience. So what made you focus on that kind of sub 5 million EBITDA investing model?
Yeah, it's obviously what I'm most familiar with. I've kind of been there my whole life. And I think it's hugely rewarding. I mean, you take a business that's 5 million in revenue, making $1 million, and you're able to build the team and build the processes and really watch them or help them transform it into a company that's 100 or 200 million in maybe a little bit longer period of time than a normal private equity fund. And it goes from make 30 employees to hundreds of employees. It's really like playing college or high school sports again. You get to build the team, you get to build a plan, execute the plan, and hopefully at the end of the game, tally up the score and win the game or win the league championship.
I suppose if I was certainly a typical small cap investor, obviously on the higher side of this, but also mid cap, I'd be thinking, well, there's strong elements of risk here, smaller businesses, smaller revenues, smaller profit margins, therefore makes complexities, no doubt with talent, no doubt with customers, reliance, etc., How do you kind of avoid, you know, is that conception true? And what do you do about avoiding them if they are real?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously smaller, they're valued lower for valued differently for obvious reasons. But I think what most people fail to understand is most of these companies have been around for 20, 30, 40 years. Most of them have really good margins. They just haven't really hit that operating leverage piece yet. So, you know, I think what we heavily focus on companies that are in business services, technology services, training, certification, kind of value-added distribution, companies that have very good general margins. And so once you can get some volume in there, they really do get that operating leverage piece. And I think it's also one of these businesses when it comes to risk, you know, you don't have to put a lot of leverage on these businesses when you make the acquisition. You can save the leverage for add-on acquisitions. And so I also, these businesses have been profitable for a long time. We will add cost to them when we make the acquisition, but there's always a floor that you can kind of move back to if you need to, if the market moves against you.
Makes sense.
Sorry to interrupt here. Just a quick note to highlight our new sponsor, Grata. The private equity market is rapidly shifting to a data-driven, proprietary deal sourcing standard. Grata provides the window into over 7 million middle-market private companies. Contact Grata so you can access the market first. Request a demo at www.grata.com. Now back to the podcast.
So there's a recent podcast that went out with Matthew Graff, I can't remember the surname. Apologize for that, Matthew. And he shared with us an interesting statistic, which has stuck with me since. 58% of all portfolio companies or private equity-backed businesses, the market grows the business, not the value creation model, which we can argue whether that's true or not. But if we take it is, every private equity firm I speak to will have a different answer for this, I'm sure, and how they drive it, value creation. But certainly with the size of businesses, I'm thinking this business has been around for 20 years. It's got to 5 million. You've got to do something to get it further in order to do something. The market is probably already grown slowly with that. Founder-led, no doubt, family-owned, etc. You mentioned add-on acquisitions as part of that. What are you doing to drive the value creation in these organizations?
I would say the first step is people have heard this before. We use a process called EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System. It is something that I went through the training 15 years ago, and we did it back when I was operating companies. A little different versions changed over time. But the number one answer to that is leadership. And almost all small companies we invest in, the decisions are still made by one, and if we're really lucky, two people. And so building out that team and making the decision making matrix deeper into the team is probably the number one thing. Most of our small companies don't have a sales force. I mean, it seems crazy, but they've got one or two or 10 really wonderful customers. They've built diversification around that. And so we build out sales forces. I mean, we've invested in companies with zero salespeople when we invest. And so it's really once you get those people and obviously good financial controls. Many of our companies don't have those, they don't know how much money they're making by product, by customer, by region, which then opens up the ability to raise prices and do things like that. So, many small business owners are afraid to raise prices. They haven't analyzed the market and haven't really looked at those things. So really just, Alex, it's blocking and tackling. I mean, and then if you can get those core, the right team, the right numbers, you're growing it organically again. It does then open up to the acquisitions. And we're not, in our world, we're not out there trying to buy huge companies. If we buy a $10 million revenue business making $2 or $3 million, we typically buy smaller or maybe equal size businesses. So it's, and that's usually once we've got those other pieces into the business.
Interesting. And you mentioned a few of the opportunities, letting value creation there and driving that. But if we think more established businesses, what's the main opportunity that you get from working with such smaller organizations? You mentioned the challenges. What are the opportunities that you see from being in these smaller businesses to take them, obviously, through significant growth period?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the things that all these companies need are repeatable. I mean, the things I just mentioned there about sales teams and financial statements and so forth. Also, I mean, let's just, the part of the reason we're attracted to the market is smaller companies are valued differently. They're valued less typically than their larger peers. And so if you can buy a company that's $1 million, $1.5 million of free cash flow and you can double or triple the size and you can de-risk it by putting an additional deeper team, generally, people, especially in those industries I mentioned earlier, generally people will value those companies higher. So we're getting EBITDA expansion, we're getting multiple expansion. And that's why we've chosen this. It's, you know, it's hard work, but it truly is value creation when you can pull it off.
I'm interested. Obviously, you know, you're obviously in a private equity firm, therefore a private equity investor. But especially with the smaller your businesses and the smaller your investments, means the more hands-on the investor has to be or the operating team. Do you spend a lot of time in the portfolio company? Would you guys kind of suggest that you're fairly hands-on and therefore very operator-type focused as investors?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're very active in the beginning, and the activity is around getting around the right team. Again, you know, it's like we don't have enough time to truly operate the companies, but if you can get the, you know, kind of maybe start with the great financial controls, so you know what you see, and then you build out the sales team, so you now you're growing revenue and you take the pressure off the founder. And hopefully free them up to do, you know, what they do best. It's not always comfortable with them, but you know, that's really where we've got to focus our time and effort. And then I spend a lot of time on the BD side. I enjoy it. I enjoy the portfolio companies and the interaction with the leadership. We also have two full-time BD people to work on the add-on acquisition side. And we recently hired a guy named David Jacob, who comes out of the Riverside Companies, their microcap fund. And he's really helping us as he's a managing partner think through, quite frankly, how to do it with a lot more scale.
Excellent. Sounds like a good addition. Has that brought a fair bit of process systems to the firm? In addition, obviously, when you hire the guys from the big firms, they tend to come with a lot more of a playbook and process, especially if he's already in microcap.
Yeah, that's, you know, obviously why I sought him out. I've known him for 5 or 6 years, and we had been chatting about it for a while. But absolutely, and from a skill co, as you can probably tell from my more freestyling nature, I'm much more on the entrepreneurial curve than the true, you know, kind of a private equity curve. And it's been wonderful to have him on board. And I think the processes and so forth that he knows, his experience has been invaluable so far. And I think even our, you know, even the CEOs are happy to see, you know, to see some of the experience and tools he's bringing. So
what, if you're happy to share them, what are some of the tools that he's brought in and what has he implemented into the firm?
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, I went back to speed and change. I'm kind of more in the operator or entrepreneur mindset. And I think having somebody there saying, wait a minute, Brendan, we agreed we were going to do this. Hey, Brendan, this is a mark. It's very helpful to me and the CEOs and the management teams that this is what we agreed to. And, you know, we've got to keep the timetable and keep the process there. And that's been a wonderful mind change, because it's when you get deep into the company, there's always reasons why certain things happen, and you do need somebody to back check that.
Yeah, no, certainly being a fan of myself, you end up wanting to implement something, well, wanting to create something and then give that to somebody else to implement and hold on, and you're into the next bit. And I certainly know that very well. And as does Alice, our head of ops and marketing, would know that. Definitely describe me as that. Comes up with an idea and then dumps it on her to make happen. What do you love about private equity, Brendan? And what do you dislike about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a wonderful tool. It's been crazy successful as an industry over a very long period of time. So obviously there's value being created and there's focus being created. And I think that it's probably the same thing on the other side, is sometimes it can be pretty ruthless. And at the end of the day, it is people, and it is, you're dealing with people and you're dealing with these entrepreneurs. And so there's an interesting balance. And I think it was a fun discussion when Dave came on to talk about the balance between you're dealing with people and we also have investors we made big promises to. And so I think generally private equity has been a very good thing for most companies and most investors and most entrepreneurs. And it does open up a lot of opportunity in some of these smaller or mid-sized companies. I mean, some of these companies wouldn't change without the capital and expertise being brought by the industry.
And what do you dislike about it?
It's probably the more calculated side. I think a lot of times, you know, there's a lack of full understanding, and this probably isn't fair because I've never been in a big firm, but there's lack of maybe full understanding of the impact to the people when they're making some of these big decisions.
Yeah, makes sense. And what are your influences? What do you read? What do you watch? What do you listen to? You would recommend to others?
I don't read a whole lot, but I listen to a lot of books and I listen to a lot of podcasts. And, you know, it's always amazing. Like when I heard about this one, it's just, there's such great content out there. You know, I would say that one of the biggest influences to me is peer groups. And I in the private equity world, that's almost like a swear word. But I've been involved in like the Entrepreneurs Organization. I was involved for maybe 19, 20 years. I'm currently involved in Vistage and Strategic Coach. And we've been kind of all in on like the EOS process for a long time. And what I can say is, you know, all profound knowledge comes from the outside. And a lot of times people kind of sit around the same three or four people or, you know, kind of in their group and they don't change. And so I just a huge peer group fan, you know, and kind of learning from others. And that was my answer when I was thinking about it coming into this call.
Perfect. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, how best do they get in touch with you, please?
Sure. Obviously, LinkedIn, Brendan Anderson at Scaleco, or my email is literally brendan@scaleco.com. Very S-C-A-L-E-C-O.com. Very complicated.
Excellent. Well, we'll put that in the show notes. Well, thank you very much for coming in. Give us an insight into the world of Scaleco, but obviously, of course, the microcap market. So thank you very much for coming across and sharing everything you have done.
Thanks, Alex. It was a pleasure to meet you, and it was fun to talk to you.
You too. And as always, thank you very much for all of our listeners for joining us. And of course, should you ever need support with your private equity professionals or portfolio executive hiring across Europe or North America, please do reach out to us at Raw Selection. But till the next time, keep smashing it. And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Private Equity Podcast on www.raw-selection.com.